Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. And I'm going to start out with, frankly, the most important election that we're going to see this year for the Supreme Court. February 21 is the primary. That's 3 weeks from tomorrow. 3 weeks from tomorrow, February 21 is the primary. The primary is the ballgame, because there are four people running, and this is an unusual primary because the Supreme Court is not partisan. They don't run as Democrats or Republicans. They just flat out put their names down. You'll just see four names. Four people put in the right signatures, and they're going to be on the ballot. Two of them are MAGA, right-wing, gerrymander Republicans. I don't care if you are a Democrat, Republican, Independent, or what. You should not vote for either one of those two, and I'll tell you why. One of them is this fellow, Dan Kelly. Dan Kelly is probably the super MAGA, super Trumper, super election denier, super gerrymanderer. If he gets on, there would then still be a 4-3 Republican majority. And they would stymie this court and this state for 10 more years. It's a 10-year term, by the way. 10-year term. Governor's 4-year term. Supreme Court is 10-year term. And most states don't elect their Supreme Courts. You don't elect the U.S. Supreme Court. U.S. Supreme Court has 9 justices. They sit in Washington, D.C., and they're the big kahuna, the 800-pound gorilla. When cases go up to them, that's it. But each state has a Supreme Court. Oddly enough, New York, because the state has to be a little strange, every state has to have its weirdism, the highest court, the equivalent of the Supreme Court in the state of New York, is called the Court of Appeals. And then they have lower courts called the Supreme Court. So don't get hung up in verbiage. But here in Wisconsin, our Supreme Court has 7 people on it, and that is the last word on the law, unless the U.S. Supreme Court takes a case on appeal from them, through what's called a petition for a writ of certiorari. You don't have to worry about that. But on the 21st, there are going to be 4 people winnowed down to 2. The top 2 vote getters get it. Top 2 vote getters get it. By far and away, the strongest candidate, in fact, in my opinion, really the only candidate who should sit on the Supreme Court, is Judge Janet Protasiewicz. She spells her name P-R-O-T. A-S-I-E-W-I-C-Z, Protasiewicz. She has extensive experience as a prosecutor, well over 20 years in the Milwaukee DA's office, prosecuting the toughest crimes. Murder, burglary, rape, just terrible, terrible crimes. She's a tough prosecutor, but fair, honest, and good. And now she's a judge. She has been for 2 terms. And she, in her campaign, has said 2 things. And this is rare for a judge to do, and she said it very skillfully, because the mantra is, well, a judge isn't supposed to say how they rule on a case. She said, well, I can tell you about my family values, my personal values, and one of them is, I think that a woman has a right to choose. A woman has a right to choose. If a woman chooses to have an abortion, she has a right to do that. She's the only one of the 4 justices who's come out and said that. And the second thing she said is, we are going to get rid of gerrymandering. Gerrymandering are rigged maps. That's her phrase, rigged maps. And she went further. She said, the day that I'm sworn in, the next day, if anybody wants to file a lawsuit to throw these rigged maps out and get in fair maps, I hope they do. And she is hoping that somebody will file a suit right after she's sworn in to invalidate that 1849 statute. That was 1849. Now, that was a long, long time ago. 174 years when women couldn't vote, outlawing abortion, making it a crime. If she is on the Supreme Court, if lawsuits are filed the day after, you can see fair maps come in and you can see that 1849 statute invalidated. Now, what is the consequence of the Supreme Court? I've just given you two of them. You might say, well, Matt, come on. Well, no, not come on. Not come on. Right now, we are losing OBGYNs in the state. They're getting out of the state. The young people coming out of med school who are OBGYNs don't want to stay in the state. Because that 1849 statute is so harsh and is based on a science and knowledge of medicine that's 174 years ago, that there are some doctors around the country who won't even treat any kind of complication with a pregnancy. How about an ectopic pregnancy? How about something that causes a miscarriage? Here's what they're afraid of. You can say that a lot of DAs aren't going to prosecute that, even under the 1849 law, and that's probably true. Probably the DA in Dane County won't, Milwaukee County won't. But there are DAs, there's 72 counties in the state, and there are DAs who want to be governor. They want to be a congressman. They want to be senator. They want to be president. They want to move on up. Every politician looks in the mirror and says, I see a future president or a senator or a governor. They will get plenty of exposure on court TV if they file a criminal charge against a doctor, even for treating an ectopic pregnancy or something that involves a miscarriage. They'll lose the case, maybe. And if they don't lose the case, they'll then lose it on appeal, maybe. And if they don't lose it on appeal, surely the U.S. Supreme Court will grant a writ of certiorari and overturn it. Maybe, but unlikely. So why should it, you know, OBGYN is a very, very tough practice. And so their insurance premiums are high. It's a very tough practice. Should they take the chance of being prosecuted by some random, young, hotshot, ambitious DA who wants to be on TV? And the answer is no. The answer is no. If Janet Protasiewicz does not get through that primary on February 21, and she is going to get through because she raised more money than all the other three candidates combined in the latest filing on January 17. She's been endorsed by, I think, every major labor union, UAW, Carpenters, American Federation of Teachers, Laborers, several others. She will, but you must get out and vote. You must get out and vote. Because she has laid it on the line. She's flat out come out and said, the minute that I am sworn in, bring a gerrymander lawsuit. And then it will be 4-3 the other way. She will throw out those maps and they will appoint what's called a special master or referee, some experts on statistics and political science at UW-Madison probably, or some university, to. And their charge will be fair maps, as much as possible, making 50-50 maps. May the best man win. May the best woman win. May the best candidate win. And there'll be a lawsuit, and there is one filed now, but it'll end up in front of her, that says, is this 1849 statute constitutional? And she will say, it is not constitutional, throw it out, and then there'll be no law in the state prohibiting it. And I think people of goodwill probably want some legislation addressing the issue. Let's say they do. If the legislature passes a right-wing nut job piece of legislation, Evers will veto it, and they don't have a veto-proof majority. That's how it's supposed to work. But by just reciting the mantra of an 1849 statute that was passed 174 years ago when women couldn't vote. On something directly affected them. And it was based on 1849 medicine and science. Well, you know something? If Dan Kelly one of the right-wing people who is being supported by the Elines, the billionaire out-of-state Elines, going to pour millions of dollars into his campaign. If he gets in, he will uphold the 1849 statute, and he will uphold gerrymandering. The other Republican, this Jennifer Doro, out of Waukesha, she gets in, it's the same thing. She gets in, it's the same thing. Both of these people at times were asked in their application when Scott Walker appointed them to say, what do they think is the worst Supreme Court decision ever? The worst. Jennifer Doro said it was the one that overturned the Texas law on sodomy, you know, sex between gay people. Why is she obsessing about this? Kelly said gay marriage. If these people get on, you might as well put Marjorie Taylor Greene on there. We might as well put Matt Gaetz on there. Now, there's a fourth candidate, Everett Mitchell, and I've talked about Everett Mitchell. Everett Mitchell is a judge in Madison, and we've talked about that some more, and I'm not going to beat a dead horse here, but the fact of the matter is, if he ever were the Democrat that got through the primary, he would be slimed by the Republicans beyond belief. He has so much baggage. Look how Mandela Barnes got slimed. This guy, accused by his wife of slipping her a sleeping pill and having sex with her when she could not consent, abusing her so long that she had to check herself in a hospital and that she had to check him into a mental health facility, and he denied that and said, I check myself. Okay, look, I don't want to get into all this. I don't want the billionaires from Illinois sliming this guy for 6 weeks after the primary, and then we're going to be stuck with gerrymandering the 1849 statute, the 1849 statute, for 10 more years. I don't want it, and neither do you. What do? You vote. Tell people in your family to vote. Write letters to the editor. Call into radio stations. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. I see you on the line. I'm looking right at you. Do not hang up. Get back to you right after the break. Gotta cut you down sooner or later. Gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Director. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Right to the lines, Gene of Eau Claire, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Gene?
Good afternoon, Matt. Thank you so much for your show and the work that you're doing. We really appreciate it in our state. I'd like to bring up something, you know, on this topic that you're talking about, and I think people need to look at it from a lot of different perspectives. And, you know, for the physician or healthcare worker and for the female patient, it isn't a male patient, her family, her reputation, the exposures that happen, and the cost of a legal action, the cost of going to an appellate court, the time invested, the cost to our state is significant because no one will want to practice, which they're leaving right now, the cost in arbitration, cost of the judge's time. When they can get this taken care of and they refuse to, we need a judge that's up there for justice for the people, even with PFAS. The illnesses and things that PFAS cost the people, when you got idiots running our state who don't give one iota, and I'm talking about the people with the R after their name, that are making life really difficult in our state health-wise significantly when they are not physicians and they're making all of these decisions that impact people's health and life. So we need to do this. We need to get a justice in there who is working there for justice for the people in the state of Wisconsin, for all of us, for your families, for your children, and for upcoming generations. So this is serious stuff. Lawsuits are lawsuits. But the people that have to bring these lawsuits suffer more than they're ever compensated for, and that impacts every single one of us. Thank you, Matt. I didn't need to get on a roll here.
Oh, thank you, Gene. I love your passion. And I think we got to vote for Janet Protasiewicz. I mean, I'll tell you something. If you want to wake up the day after the general election in April and find out that for the next 10 years you're going to have gerrymandering, that 1849 statute is still in effect, and it scares doctors throughout the state and women who didn't get to vote for it, for Pete's sake, back in 1849. I mean, in Texas, they fine $10,000. If your neighbor rats on you, you're going to, you know, going to an abortion clinic, $10,000. The doctor has to pay. This has got to stop, okay? I mean, this has got to stop, and I'm telling you how to stop it. And if you don't want rigged districts, gerrymandered, and you don't want the 1849 statute, vote for Janet Protasiewicz. Simple as that. We're going in order. Don't hang up. Wisco Paul, my friend. You're next. What's on your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Thanks for taking my call, Matt. It's hard to top Jeannie's call. Totally awesome call. The only thing that really gets me right now, well, first of all, and I can say this right out, Mitchell doesn't have a permanent general election because they'll destroy the man. Because you're looking at $30 million. You're looking at $30 million. This is a very important election for on the Republican Party, but they're already calling it a liberal against a conservative election, and I don't understand that. But at any rate, this is a very important election. The thing that scares me the most is low turnout, especially in the primary here. So Jeannie about said it all, and thank you, Jeannie, and thanks for listening to me, Matt. Bye.
Thank you, Wisco Paul. Very sound advice. Vote February 21. You have got to vote on February 21. These billionaires from Illinois are going to say, oh, it's liberal conservative. There's nothing conservative about putting a doctor in jail. There's nothing conservative about scaring OBGYNs out of the state. And there's nothing conservative about rigged maps. This is commie stuff. There are commie tendencies in the Republican Party. That's not conservative. It's commie. Okay, Gary of Sussex, my friend, you're next. What's on your mind today, Gary of Sussex?
No, you're not going to be happy talking to me because I have a different point of view on things. Doral, she's well-known throughout the United States. I think that she's a very fair judge, obviously. Kelly was on the Supreme Court, so he's probably the most qualified by far out of all four candidates. Mitchell, I have no idea why you're doing such a hack job on every single time we talk about it. You're just ripping him apart, a fellow Democrat, which is very sad to hear. Now, he's a pastor, so, you know, he's not perfect. He's not Jesus, but he makes dumb mistakes. He did bad things. And then Janet Protasiewicz, whatever her last name is, I know I'm ripping it apart. I don't mean to do that, but she's got a hard name to pronounce. She is a liberal soft on crime Milwaukee court judge. And if you want soft on crime judges and you want people to run around and get out of jail free cards all the time with driving bad, killing, and everything like that, then vote for her. Because she's a liberal, soft on crime.
Well, and Gary, so let me just jump in. When you talk about soft on crime, let's talk about Jennifer Doro. Her son's under investigation. She sent him allegedly a text saying he's still dealing drugs. There's a fentanyl death of a guy named Cade Reddington, and the cops want to talk to him about it, and he won't talk to him, and he has a lawyer, and she won't say whether she paid for the lawyer. You want to talk soft on crime? Okay, go ahead, but don't bring in Janet Doro. Sir, Janet Protasiewicz is one of the toughest prosecutors in Milwaukee County. That's where the real crime is. She's a very good, tough prosecutor. And this guy, Dan Kelly is a guy who is appointed by Walker and couldn't hold his seat. Once you're appointed, you got to run again. You can't just lie in the weeds for a while. And he was so bad, he didn't carry his seat. He's not qualified to be on the Supreme Court. The electorate the last time threw him out because he wasn't qualified. And Doro, we don't want to hear about fentanyl and about why her son won't talk and why she sent him a text that said, are you still dealing drugs? And didn't, I mean, drugs are one thing. Fentanyl kills. One pill can kill. So these two are out to lunch. They're bad news. And Mitchell, for Pete's sake, I've already talked about Mitchell. Janet Protasiewicz is the only one. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Dead blood in the streets, it's up to my ankles. Blood in the streets, it's up to my knee. Blood in the streets, the town of Chicago. Blood on the rise is following. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We go right to the lines in order. Do not hang up. I'm going to start out first with Maggie Dawn, my co-host. Thanks for calling, Maggie. What's in your mind today?
Hey, Matt, how you doing? I just... So, Dan Kelly being the, quote, most experienced candidate. No. Dan Kelly was a corporate litigator at a white shoe law firm in Milwaukee for a very long time. He clerked for a couple of judges, which is great. But he was never a judge until right. Scott Walker appointed him to the Supreme Court. So I don't know how anybody can make a straight-faced argument that he's the most qualified. It depends on what do you view as relevant qualifications. I don't mean to say that you must have, you must serve as a judge before being elevated or elected to the Supreme Court, but relative to Judge Protasiewicz, I don't think that hard to, is that hard to say, or Judge Mitchell even, or even Judge Doro. If actual experience is on the bench, Dan Kelly is, he's not even in the running for the most qualified. He got an appointment.
Exactly.
Supreme Court.
And Janet Doro is more qualified than all of them combined, quite frankly. I mean, not Janet Doro. Janet Protasiewicz is more qualified than any of the other three.
Exactly. And as to Judge Janet being somehow labeled, because she is left of center, as a soft on crime judge, is so devoid of any relationship to reality. That it defies the imagination.
She well, Megan, let me, if I can. Let me jump in. She's not left of center. She believes in a woman's right to choose. That's not left of center. That is something that she believes that an 1849 statute shouldn't control things when it's 174 years old and women couldn't vote on it. So she's not left of center on that.
Well,
she's not left
point,
of center on fair maps.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. You could call her exactly center, right? Common sense.
No, I'm not calling her. She is a judge. She's a judge, Maggie. But thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. She's not left of center. What she is for freedom of choice. She's pro-choice, and she is also pro-fair maps. And she doesn't like gerrymandering. I would think anybody in the country would be that way. Maggie, excellent. Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate it. Joe of Madison, my friend, you're next. Thanks for calling, Joe. What's in your mind?
I'm interested in your take on this as a lawyer, Matt. That would be Jennifer Doro. And the situation that was described in a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article by Dan Bice last week that described a situation with her son, Michael, who is under investigation, not charged, but under investigation for dealing what he apparently thought was a Percocet pill to a friend of his named Cade Remington, and that pill was laced with fentanyl, and that young man, Cade, C-A-D-E, Remington, died from ingesting that pill. So this has been under investigation for 15 months. My question is this. It said within the article that Michael Doro showed friends a text that he had received from his mother, Judge Doro, that asked the question, are you still dealing drugs? My question to you would be, I understand, or maybe I don't have this right, that the average citizen is not necessarily required to turn somebody in if they hear of a crime, but are you still dealing drugs? from the mother of a man who was under investigation would seem to indicate that she knew that there was a pattern of dealing drugs and was wondering if that illegal activity was ongoing. What are the requirements for a judge who is an officer of the court, right, an officer of the court? What are the rules for judges if they hear that they or they know that there is illegal activity going on? Are they required to report? What's the situation with that particular situation? Thanks, Matt. I'll take my answer off air.
Yeah, those are very, very good questions. Let me respond to them right now. First of all, while it is true that the average person, when they're informed of something, I mean, if they have a hint of morality and there's any danger involved for anybody, they have to say something about it. But in this particular case, no one is saying that Jennifer Doro is going to be charged for not telling the police that her son was dealing drugs. But the average person, Joe, doesn't run for the Supreme Court. That's a higher bar. And even though the average person doesn't have a legal obligation to do it, if you're running for the Supreme Court, here's the thing that bothers me a great deal about this. The drugs that are being dealt here, some were laced with fentanyl. They were counterfeit products, and they killed a kid. And he was a UWM student, Cade Reddington. Now, the police would like to know where Michael Doro gets his stuff so that they can trace the fentanyl part of it. Right now, no one knows where he got his stuff, and they don't know who had it and could put fentanyl in it. Now, he hired a lawyer. I assume that his parents paid for the lawyer. Okay. But one of the things the lawyer could do would be to go to the cops and say, look, I will pass on to you information like the fentanyl, you know, where this particular batch came, because otherwise it's floating around out there. It's going to kill somebody else. The second thing is there are some things, Joe, you should know, that are a criminal offense and the average person or a Supreme Court justice can't do. You can't in any way assist or conceal or in any way hide somebody who has committed a felony. So, for instance, and this is sad, but let's say somebody robs a gas station or God forbid, somebody kills somebody and runs to your house and you hide them so the cops can't see them. And then you maybe give them some money and some clothes and let them use your car to get out of town. You've committed an offense. You're abetting that. It's very hard, though, not to, if it's your son or your daughter or your brother or your sister or your friend. And most people do assist them. But if you assist them after they've committed a crime in basically helping them conceal the crime or flee and that kind of thing, that is a crime. You've committed a crime yourself. Now, in this case, I get back to the Supreme Court candidacy. Simply a mother asking her son, are you still dealing drugs, is not in and of itself actionable. No one's saying she'll be prosecuted. But Joe, she's running for the Supreme Court. She's running for the Supreme Court, and the drugs involve fentanyl that killed the kid. So, you know, I don't know, how low is the bar? I mean, you know, one bar you might say is you run for the Supreme Court, probably you should be a little more worried about more fentanyl getting out and killing more kids at UWM. And this wasn't just a friend, I think, from the article, the Vice article. This guy had been selling this stuff before. So that's your question. If you do anything to assist him to conceal, hide him, or, you know, give aid and comfort, you can commit a crime. In this case, just asking about it, no one's saying she's going to be prosecuted, but no one says she has to run for the Supreme Court either. And I'm concerned about the cops would like to know where the fentanyl come from. That's what they really want to know about. Not a sleeping pill or Percocet or something like that, but one pill can kill. Thanks a lot for calling, as always, Joe. Tom of McFarland, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Tom of McFarland?
Hi, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. And, you know, just to kind of add additional context to hearing from Sussex comments, I think there's a difference. Like when you are talking about Judge Mitchell, I don't see you coming attacking him like Gary was saying. You know, Gary, I would love it if Judge Mitchell was the nominee and the GOP were running ads about, man, what an American success story Judge Mitchell is. And this is awesome that he was able to turn his life around in the manner that he did. But we all know those won't be the GOP ads. They will come after Judge Mitchell in exactly the manner that you are describing. And that's why you're providing that information, that this will be the line that the GOP will run if Judge Mitchell is the nominee. And unfortunately, there are people in Wisconsin that they will believe the smear campaign that the GOP will run over any of the reforms that he might have put into place in his life. I think in a perfect world, Judge Mitchell would be an outstanding justice. But I think in the world where we have Republicans, that won't be possible, at least not at this level. Thank you for the call.
Tom, that is very well stated. And frankly, I'm glad you put it that way. What I'm trying to say to everybody is this. There are a lot of issues that I'm concerned with. But the two issues I'm concerned with the most in the Supreme Court race are getting rid of gerrymandering and invalidating that 1849 statute so that OBGYNs coming out of UW-Madison Med School don't immediately head for Illinois and New York, because they don't, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to practice obstetrics and gynecology, say, in Price County or in Rusk County. Very fine people, very fine folks. And I don't know the DAs up there, and they may be very fine people. But all one of them has to do is prosecute one of these doctors for treating an ectopic pregnancy, you know, pregnancy outside the womb, and where the woman's life is in danger. And then there'll be an argument about, well, is the life of the mother an exception? Well, then there'll be expert testimony. It wasn't at risk. Something else could have been done. You see what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want this happening in our state. I don't want it happening in our state. And the statute, women could not vote for it. They could not vote for the legislature that passed the statute in 1849. So how constitutional is it to impose a statute on a class of people, in this case, more than 50% of the people, whose bodies are affected and couldn't vote on it? I don't think that's a difficult decision for a judge. I would hold it unconstitutional. Unconstitutional. And many would. But if this fellow Kelly gets on the Supreme Court, or Jennifer Doro, and I think she's going to have some real problems getting there, given everything I just talked about with Joe Madison. But and it's 4-3 to uphold the 1849 statute. There'll be a lot of soft words. There'll be a lot of, we assume people will be reasonable. No, I don't assume they'll be reasonable at all. The statute's a statute. Statute's a statute. And if there's a factual dispute about whether there was an abortion performed and required, no matter what the medical consequence, in a county that has a DA that would like to be a congressman, would like to be governor, would like to be on court TV for a week or two, and fulminating, all that matters these days is name recognition, apparently. I don't want that, because women are going to be the victims. But initially, we're going to lose doctors, a hell of a lot of doctors, and it's very hard to get OBGYNs to stay in the state, and it's even harder to get them to go to rural counties. What do you want? Women in Ashland to have to, what, fly to Duluth or to, drive to Duluth or fly to Minneapolis? I mean, what if they're in Stevens Point? You know, where they have to come down to Milwaukee? And even then, this risk. So what if I can get nothing over to everybody in this particular segment, it would be this: vote on February 21. The most qualified person, and I'm tired of the Republicans joking about her last name. It's a good name, Protasiewicz. It's a strong Polish name from Milwaukee. Very fine person, Janet Protasiewicz, Protasiewicz. Judge Janet P., we think very highly of her down here. She's a very tough, firm judge, but fair, very fair. And she has flat out said, bring an 1849 statute case and a gerrymandering case the day after I'm sworn in. Even Mitchell hasn't said that. She has said that. What more do we have to say? And as Tommy McFarland just said, I know what those ads are going to look like against Mitchell and the general. I know very well. Take a look at Mandela's and put him on steroids. Take Mandela's ads and put him by a factor of 10. Going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Because you're mine.
Don't let me down. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to turn to Ukraine. Some very serious developments. I want to talk very, very candidly about what's happening and what has to be done, in my opinion. What's happening and what has to be done, in my opinion. Russia is now preparing a winter offensive. They're not going to wait till the spring in the Donbass. They have 70,000 troops massed in Crimea. And remember, they don't care about their troops. And when I say that, the mothers of the troops do. But Putin does not. He's cleared out prisons, mental hospitals, the homeless. They kill people who try to desert. In one case with the Wagner group, they're like the SS, the Waffen-SS. They castrated a guy who tried to escape from battle. They are vicious. And they simply throw them in as fodder. And they're losing far more troops than Ukraine does. However, Russia has 145 million people. Ukraine has 45 million. 10 million of them are refugees out of the country. It doesn't matter if they kill twice as many Russians as they get killed. They'll ultimately lose on that arithmetic. And one of the things that I had that really puzzled me is if you had to pick a country where people ethnically and religiously and culturally are closest to Russia, it would be Ukraine. The Slavic people, the wonderful people, they are, many of them are Russian Orthodox, same church. Some of the holiest sites in Russian Orthodox liturgy are in Ukraine. The western part are Catholic, but the eastern part, Russian Orthodox. And many of them speak Russian. Many of the people that you think of as Russian, musicians and others in history, actually were Ukrainian. What is going on, in my opinion, is Russia had a 10-year flirtation with democracy under Boris Yeltsin, and then it fell apart when the oligarchs took over. And really, a mafia runs the government, and Putin and the oligarchs steal 80% of the surplus wealth of Russia. And people get uneasy, and they think they have to direct their attention outwardly to unify people by starting a war. Secondly, I think there is a deep-seated subliminal jealousy on the part of the Russians for Ukraine and any Slavic people who embrace Western values, capitalism and democracy and freedom of the press and freedom of religion. And they see how well they're doing materially and how happy they are. They hate themselves, and then they project it outward. If you can see it in the form of warfare. It's not warfare, it's a genocide. Raping women in front of their children and husbands, murdering old folks for sport. They'll just shoot at civilians on the street as if they're animals. This is self-hatred because they're projecting out and they realize I could have amounted to something. I could have had a culture that amounted to something, and I have a garbage culture. A bogged down war over time hurts Ukraine. It hurts Ukraine. And some people say, well, we should what? We should compromise. We should settle this with Putin. Let me tell you, 1994, you've heard of the Budapest Accords. In Budapest, there was a memorandum signed by the United States, Russia, the United Kingdom, and then China and France chimed in with a lesser one. And it basically said that they all guaranteed that they would not invade Ukraine, including Russia. Those guaranteed the borders. The Russians have never told the truth in diplomacy or warfare in 1,000 years, and they never will. The Budapest Accords were 1994. It's not even 30 years ago, and they've lied, and they've gone in and attacked Ukraine. You can't negotiate or settle with Putin. Putin will lie. He'll want to refresh his troops. He'll want to stock up, and then he'll just invade again. And if you sign another Budapest Accord, he'd invade in 10 more years. Now, let me say something. And this is a hard thing to say, but I'll say it. I've said it in the past. Putin has got to be killed. It's as simple as that. It would be to our advantage if Putin were killed by a Russian or by Russians. If necessary, I think the time's come, him and Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of this sadistic mafia, Hitlerian SS, the Wagner Group, Ramzay Kartikov, the chief Islamic terrorist from Chechnya. These people have got to be killed. The easiest way to do it is to have the Ukrainians put so much military pressure on them that they know they're going to lose the war. They don't dare launch tactical nuclear weapons. And their own people will rise up. There'll be a military coup. What is that going to take? It is about time, and Joe Biden, listen to me good. It's about time that we sent them F-15 planes, fighter jets, and that we sent them 180-mile HIMAR ranges so they can bomb Crimea. For God's sake, Ukraine is the size of Texas. What good does it do to give them 50-mile HIMARS? 180 miles is what they need. We're going to the lines. Jake of Eureka, California, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Jake?
Hey, man, thank God Joe Biden is president instead of that puppet Donald Trump who would just do whatever Vladimir Putin wanted. You know,
you're right.
And these people were constantly saying it's the Ukraine's fault and somehow we should have placated Putin so he didn't, you know, launch this invasion. There's no placating a madman. There's no placating a wannabe Hitler. I mean, this guy has to be defeated, bottom line. And any of those people out there who think Neville Chamberlain, you know, it is the example we should follow, just forget anything they have to say on the subject.
You're right on the money. Putin is a sadist. He's a genocidal freak. So is Yevgeny Prigozhin, Ramzan Kartikov. So is Sergei Lavrov. So are all of them. They've got to be killed. I mean, I'm going to come right out and say it. They've got to be killed. And it is in our interest to have them killed by their own military or whoever takes over as a face saver. You cannot compromise with Putin because he'll be killed if he compromises. He knows it. He's riding the back of a tiger. They're committing genocide. They're committing sadistic.